is Femi Kuti, and you are listening to NYC Radio Live.
Hey folks, how you doing? I'm good, thanks. I'm running off to the radio station and trying to get this all together. I had a really good conversation with Akash Mittal, a great saxophone player. You're gonna hear our chat in anticipation of a show he has March 11th at National Sawdust with some killer players, Rajna Swaminathan and Henry Dunham and Miles Okazaki on guitar. And then after that, we'll share his live set from Ragas Live 2017 at the Rubin Museum. And that is with Rez Abazi, great jazz guitarist Rez Abazi, and Alex Ritz on drums. All right. Enjoy. Peace. All right. You're listening to NYC Radio Live. I am in the lovely home of Akash Mittal. His Awaz Trio has a show coming up very soon. When is that?
It is next Sunday, actually. Yeah. March 11th. National Sawdust.
All right. So, how you feeling?
Feeling great, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, good. All right, well, I guess we could start at the very top, because you kind of had a unique entry into jazz, and I know you have a background in grounding in kind of Indian classical music, probably a whole bunch of other stuff too, I bet.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe we could just start at the beginning. So how did this music all enter your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I really got into jazz when I was in high school. And before that, I had played music. I was playing clarinet. I played in band. It was something to do. But in early high school, I got a saxophone, and that was an important development that helped me find my voice. But what really made a big difference was discovering that I could improvise, that I could create this music in the moment and essentially sculpt it or compose it in real time. And that was a really big change. That's when I became serious about music, essentially. It was when I discovered improvisation. And it went from something that I just sort of did to becoming like a focus in my life and putting a ton of energy into it. Shortly after that time, starting with pretty straight-ahead jazz and also listening to things like Interstellar Space and Ornette Coleman and John Coltrane's late period with Interstellar Space, Stellar Regions. So I was checking that stuff out at the same time. I was checking out Duke Ellington and Johnny Hodges and those guys. I also discovered Ravi Shankar and Ustadala Raka in one of my stepfather's record collections, essentially. And I remember pulling it out and recognizing it was from India. And at that time, I hadn't done too much exploration of my own heritage. It was something I was curious about. And so I put it on. And honestly, the sitar alap in the beginning didn't really grab me. But when the tabla came in, I heard these rhythms that were just infectious. And that was my gateway into that music.
Right. Okay. And this was out on the West Coast?
This was actually in Colorado, but yeah, out on the western side of the country.
Cool. All right. And then, so you get deep into it. And I guess you make a life of it. You decide to go to music school. Is that what you did?
Yes. Actually, I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder and did a classical saxophone degree. So in addition to this interest in jazz and Indian music, I ended up studying the whole French tradition of saxophone playing, where you're playing concertos and sonatas and some pretty cool avant-garde Japanese composers, Ryo Noda being one of them. But that was a really interesting kind of different sound and education.
Right. Cool. And then I guess after that, you went to India and studied for a while, or what happened after that point?
Yeah. So starting in 2009, so I'd graduated college. I had just started my career as a freelance musician. And I made my first trip over to India and had this family connection, actually, that Ravi Shankar was friends with my aunt and uncle in Chicago. And so when he would come out there on tour, he would meet them for lunch. They'd have him over. They'd drive around Chicago and show him buildings. I mean, they were like buddies. And through that, they became very well connected in the Hindustani music scene. So when I expressed an interest in Indian music and I had saved up some money, I went to Calcutta, and my aunt and uncle in Chicago basically set up for me to stay with Tanmoy Bose, who was Ravi Shankar's tabla player at the time. And so I was living with Tanmoy Da, and Tanmoy Bose introduced me to who ended up being my teacher and guru, which is Pratyush Banerjee, a really great sarod player based in Calcutta. So in 2009, I started going on these month-long residencies, sabbaticals, study trips, whatever you want to call it, and living with Tanmoy Da, studying with Pratyush Da, and being immersed both in the music and the scene there, both the Hindustani scene and the creative scene.
Oh, there's a creative scene in Calcutta.
Yeah, one thing I was really blown away by was just finding other creative improvisers who were creating bands. They were drawing from a myriad of influences, and I felt like I really found my people through that scene. And they were, you know, Bengalis essentially, like, hanging out trying to create original projects. And they were just as curious about Hindustani music as I was. They were just as curious about jazz. And they were also on this path trying to create their own voice with that music.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. I had a theory that, at least in the past, earlier generations, that some of our best American music didn't all make it over to India. So sometimes... Mm-hmm. I would hear in the guitarists that they seem more influenced by, you know, Eddie Van Halen than John Lee Hooker or something like that. I mean, am I totally off base, or was there a certain amount of music that in the past generations? I'm sure that's all changed now with the internet, but I don't know.
Well, I agree with you. I think that's what has changed. And what I discovered was that people around my age were, through YouTube videos and other formats with the internet, having access to Jimi Hendrix and like other influences, essentially. I remember playing with this guitar player named Bodhi Ghosh, and he was heavily influenced by Hendrix. And when I was hanging out with, you know, with like Manik Nag Chowdhury, who goes by Bumpy in Calcutta.
I've heard about that guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's cool. So he was one of my first collaborators in terms of like creative music there. You know, he was checking out a lot of jazz artists, you know, obviously some really big names, but they were also hip to, you know, some of the underground people as well.
Right. Oh, that's encouraging and exciting. Yeah,
yeah, I remember hanging out at Jivraj Singh's house. He's a drummer that I really enjoyed playing with, and he had Greg Osby albums, you know, and things like that,
right,
which I thought was really hip.
Yeah, yeah, that's good to hear. Cool. All right, so you're out there, and you find your people, and you're doing these trips back and forth, and then what happens?
Well, it culminates, in a way, with this really big trip where I was awarded a fellowship from the American Institute of Indian Studies. Mm-hmm. And I was actually living there from 2013 to 2015. And that's when I was able to like really go in deep and study regularly with Pratyush Da, really put together some projects. And part of that fellowship was to compose a suite of pieces to explore this concept of samai, specifically night music in Hindustani music. So samai is, as I'm sure you're aware of, it is this association that ragas have with specific times of day and seasons. And it's something that's always captivated my imagination, how there's this literal expression tied into the sounds of the modes and the scales themselves, right? And while there's no hard and fast rule, and I haven't met anybody in India who can actually explain why the system is the way it is, there does seem to be some connectivity or correlation between morning ragas having a certain sound, right? And the evening ragas having a certain sound. So I was there specifically to research and study evening and night ragas to compose a suite of music that would take those, abstract them, and offer a different idea of what night music is and can be. And bouncing off this Western notion of the nocturne that Chopin wrote, that John Field wrote,
right.
This idea of night music, and oftentimes it has this kind of ethereal quality to it. But in Calcutta, what I found is when the sun goes down and things cool off a little bit more, there's actually tremendous energy that explodes in the city. You know, it's like
right.
6 o'clock hits, the sun's going down, suddenly Gorya Hot Market is just like thriving and like full of people at 100%, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like there was this other side to nighttime, especially in urban settings where many of us live now, that is high energy, that it's about collisions of people and ideas and machinery and, you know, roadways and all this stuff in a way that doesn't actually happen in the middle of the day.
Wow. That sounds awesome. So it was 3 years. You're just going back and forth, or you were actually there for 3 years?
It was 2 years. And it was one long trip of about 10 months. Uh-huh. And then I came back to premiere this work. Actually, with Rajna Swaminathan was in the original band, and she's playing with me on the 11th as well. So really excited to have her back to play the latest version of this music. So I came back to premiere that and do a number of gigs in the U.S. surrounding this music, and then went back for another long stay before moving to New York.
All in Calcutta?
Yeah, Calcutta was where I was based, mainly to study with Pratyush Banerjee. So he was the one that was teaching me these ragas, and that was the foundation for these compositions.
Wow. So now, if people hear your latest group, like we had a group of yours play the Ragas Live Festival, and you just played me a clip of your playing the
Shastra Festival.
Yeah. A lot of people won't immediately hear Indian classical music right away, right? So... I guess what else is going into the mix, and what are you trying to make happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that my goal is not to represent Indian classical music, and not even to try to express that explicitly. Part of it's because of my respect for the music itself and the amount of energy and discipline that goes into rendering that music very well. And also part of it's about my own voice and my own contribution to the music. So what I'm interested in, I come from like a hybrid culture of family. I'm half Indian, half American, and I'm really interested in like the new identities and experiences and that form out of that experience and that form out of that hybridity. And in this way, I feel it's different than a fusion where it's just about bringing things together. What I'm interested in is taking the experience I'm having with jazz, with Hindustani music, and writing new music that is part of those continuums, but takes on an identity of its own. Mm-hmm. So the structures for improvisation that we're using don't fit into either necessarily, but I feel that you could draw a connection from Hindustani music and my work in jazz to these pieces.
Right. Cool. And so what did you ultimately find when you got to New York City after Calcutta?
Do you mean musically or do you mean
sure.
in general?
Well, I don't know, but yeah, I guess you could say both.
I mean, yeah. I mean, moving to New York is, you know, a tremendous experience. What I found was that the things I thought would be hard were not hard, and the things that ended up being hard were challenges I didn't even know existed.
Okay.
So what I found immediately was that the Brooklyn Raga Massive was tremendously supportive, and it wasn't that I wasn't expecting that to be the case, but since my music is not directly representative of Indian classical music, I guess that's why I didn't expect that they would give me a platform so generously. But they definitely gave me some of my best opportunities and gigs when I first moved to New York, you know, at a time when like no one else knew who I was and wouldn't give me the time of day. So in that way, I'm very grateful to that collective and organization for their support of my music.
And what was the hard part?
The hard part?
Everything else?
I mean, yeah, right. I mean, the hard part, it's, you know, it's hard to say in New York. And of course, like as a New Yorker, you get this as well. It's some of it's just the challenges of daily life here, you know. Some of it is the things that you love about it, like the tremendous energy and momentum and hustle on a different day is exhausting and can be really challenging, right? Just finding a place to live can be really tough, right? You know, just that process. And some of those like everyday life kind of things can be really difficult. I think what I expected would be difficult was finding opportunities to work in music. And I came in with the expectation that I might, like many people do, have to work some kind of job that I'm not interested in for a long time as I meet people, right? And my experience was different from that. I feel very fortunate that I've found amazing creative outlets immediately, and there's so much energy here and so much support.
Cool. All right. And who are the musicians you're kind of excited about that you're hearing today?
You know, just in general?
Yeah.
I'm really excited about Anthony Braxton these days, and I've been checking out his music quite a bit. Just love his emphasis on not just music making, but pan creativity.
Mm.
And people who are dealing with music as one aspect of a larger concept, and they're making a statement that encompasses music as an important factor, but their statement reaches above and beyond that and offers something about who we are as people and like what we can become as well.
Wow. And so how is he pan, like what are the things he does that are beyond music, or is it just within the music that it has a statement beyond music?
He does a lot with writing, so he has his Triaxium writings, his composition notes, there's a number of essays, and then within the music it's about restructuralization. So a lot of the music he writes, he has a set of pieces that are interplanetary pieces, and they're written to be performed on different planets at the same time, you know?
Ambitious.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, like, we all think about that and kind of laugh at it now, but I really admire the courage it takes to trust in your own imagination and creativity so much that whatever idea you have, you just create it. You know, many of us sit around and think like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if X, Y, and Z happened? And then we think that's not practical and we don't move towards it. But he's thinking so far into the future, he really believes, well, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Wow. But he's writing music for a time period that he's not going to live for.
Right.
You know, along those lines, I've been really influenced by Milford Graves, who's someone who's become an important mentor of mine in the last couple of years. And he's somebody else who, in a different way, instead of dealing with planets, he's like dealing with human biology and drawing inspiration from that.
Mm. Yeah, you recently had a interview with him. What was like your takeaway from your last big conversation with Milford Graves?
Oh man, my takeaway was he's just a little background. He's quite a polymath. He is known as a famous avant-garde jazz drummer, but he's also created his own martial arts system, and there's people who only know him for that. He's an established acupuncturist and herbalist in the city, and there's people who know him for that, and they come to his place for those things. He also writes essays. He really has done a lot of different things, but it's easy to think about him in those categories because our brain automatically goes towards categories. The big takeaway I had in the last conversation was I think his work is really about sculpting energy, and it's about healing, and it's about, you know, imagination, essentially. Mm. And I wrote about this in a New Music Box essay that was published in early February, which we can probably send you the link to that.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, I interviewed him at one point over the phone. I have to dig that up.
Oh, cool.
I hope I can find it. Yeah.
Love to check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, deep guy. Cool. Well, all right. This is, I mean, all very exciting. I'm kind of finding its inspiration in this concept of what you're calling pan creativity. You know, it seems like in this age of specialization, we keep trying to figure out which box we fit in. And then there's a few people who defy that, and they just keep, they create new boxes and so forth. So that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's important about that is there is this opportunity to not even have a box there, right?
Right.
You know, and I think there's a freedom in that. And I guess that was the other part of the takeaway was energy, healing, and freedom. And that one thing with Milford is he's dealing with freedom in a context that's beyond the idea of free jazz. Free jazz in many ways was about a freedom from the structure of the music itself. And then there was other sort of freedoms that were associated with it as well. But I think in terms of Milford, he is dealing with more of a conceptual freedom, you know, and also freedom from the constructs that we create as people and dealing with like, what is the function of life itself? And he did a concert for stem cells in Italy last year, actually. And the whole thing was to see how stem cells react to his drumming.
Wow. How'd they react?
According to him, they were bouncing.
Okay.
I didn't see the video. I wasn't there. There's actually a paper published by the scientist who is involved. But what I think is interesting about that is the idea of creating music for the process of life itself, as opposed to music for entertainment or music for ritual or music for all the functions that we have music for in our life. He's interested in how do we use vibration, how we study the vibration of our bodies, you know, or the vibration of life, and how is this music just part of that continuum or feedback loop? That's what I would say. And that's, so that's something that's on my mind. Obviously, like, well, is that going to be expressed in these compositions? I hope some of it will rub off, but it's pretty heavy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the application
won't be
of this.
So direct necessarily.
Right. The application of this is going to take, you know, more than one lifetime of,
cool
work.
All right. Well, I'm excited for the 18th, and it's with
it's actually March 11th.
March 11th.
Yeah, Sunday, March 11th.
March very soon. Cool. And it's why don't you tell us the lineup and what we should look forward to?
Oh yeah. So I'm going to be performing with my Awaz trio, which will comprise Rajna Swaminathan playing mridangam, Miles Okazaki playing guitar. And we're going to have a couple of special guests. Amir El-Safar will be sitting in on trumpet. And then Charmaine Lee will be sitting in on vocals.
Wow, exciting. All fantastic musicians. All.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to be improvising with these people.
Yeah, it's going to be mostly improvisation? Or
It'll be my compositions, which involve a lot of improvisation. Yeah. So most of the material ends up being improvised, but the compositions provide frameworks or contexts for the improvisation.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for your time. I know you got some writing to do. So, looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the Ragas Live Festival. That's right. We're still live at the Rubin Museum, 24-hour festival music that's inspired by Indian classical music and many performances of Indian classical music, live on WKCR 89.9 FM and WKCR.org. We are going from 10 a.m. to 10 a.m., so we still have quite a few more hours to go. We're lucky to have Akash Mittal's Awaz Trio coming up momentarily. Right now. Enjoy.
Good morning. I had the good fortune of spending some time in Calcutta from 2013 to 2015. And part of that was getting to visit the Dover Lane Conference and this all-night music festival that would occur for a week. So I got to listen to 30 hours of live music every night, all night, for an entire week. And it's just really cool that BRM is keeping this tradition going here at the Rubin Museum. I want to start by introducing the band real quick. This is Reza Bassi on guitar. Alex Ritz on the drums. My name is Akash Mittal, and we are the Awaz Trio. We're going to play a set of tunes that I wrote while I was on that trip to Calcutta. And each of these tunes uses a specific evening or night raga as its source material, but it takes, I took it through this process that distilled them into very specific shapes and dissonances so that there's almost no raga left. So this music, while it's about or comes from or inspired by the raga tradition, it's equally inspired by the city of Calcutta itself and the sounds that I heard while I was there. So it's equally inspired by the traffic sounds on Rashbihari Avenue and the dense population weaving through the marketplace at Goriahat. It's also about these still, quiet alleys that I would see in the middle of the night when walking home. And so I wanted to also capture the vibe of the environment and how the nighttime can also be a place of incredible energy and bustle as people go about their business and activities. So without further ado, we're going to perform Nocturnes 1 through 5. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Reza Bassi on guitar. Alex Ritz on the drums. My name is Akash Mithal. We are the Awaz Trio. Before I announce our last tune, I'd like to thank a couple of people. Big thank you to everyone at the Brooklyn Rock and Massive, especially David and Seema and Neil and Arun and Samir for all your hard work, everything you've done to make this event possible and all the events that you do. Thank you to the Ruben for having us tonight. And I want to do a quick shout out to some people here tonight, Mira Dougal, Noah Gordon, Sarah Beth, Mike, Joe. Thank you so much for supporting me in my New York journey. We're concluding with Nocturne 5, and we hope you enjoy it.
Thank you.
Abbasi, Alex Ricks, and then Dr. Alex McCall. Thank you so much. Please stick around for Aaron Schrag.
We're still live from the Rubin Museum. That's right, the Ragas Live Festival. 24 hours of music. And this is the sixth year of the festival. Thanks to WKCR 89.9 FM New York City and WKCR.org. And this festival is inspired by Raga music, Indian classical music, but obviously what we just heard was not Indian classical music. But we're going to talk with the artist Akash Mittal and talk about his relationship with Indian music. Coming up in just a minute, we have Aaron Schrag, trumpet player, who also has his own relationship with Indian music. It'll be interesting to hear how that plays out. And coming up, we have some more Indian classical sets. In fact, we have Akash Mittal joining us right now. Akash is a saxophone player and educator in New York. Plays with many groups. Akash, brilliant set. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Wait, hold on. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Neil.
Great to have you here. Can you tell us about your relationship with Indian music and how that transpired in the set?
Yeah, definitely. I started listening to Hindustani music around the same time I started really listening to jazz, which was about 16 years old. And I quickly fell in love with the music. It captured my imagination. Fast forward a few years, and I was actually able to study in Calcutta with Pratush Banerjee, who is a great sarod player in that scene. And at the time, I was also living with Tanmoy Bose, who's a great tabla player. And so that was a tremendous education and introduction to that music. And I very much think of myself as a student of that music, and I'm very passionate about it.
And do these teachers, have they taught other saxophone players, for example?
Not very much. There's Jonathan Kay has taken a couple lessons with Pratush Banerjee, but for the most part, bringing the saxophone to Indian music is kind of a new idea.
Yeah. For sure. And so what do you mean? What do you think? We're having a discussion all day long about, because we got this grant through Humanities New York, and they sponsored us to have a discussion and talk about how music, traditional music from different parts of the world, you know, what it means to have this music played outside of its home, you know, in the diaspora, all over the world, and here in New York, where there's such a vibrant community.
Yeah, that's a great question. And my feeling is that the way the music is mutating and evolving here in New York is on par with the way the music was developed in India itself. And I feel like the migration of people and the music and sounds that they bring with them and the way that mutates in new environments and with new people, even across generations, is healthy and normal. And even the sort of tradition that we have today has gone through that mutation. Innovations have happened within the instruments, within the music itself. And I think that that's very natural. So I think of us as being one more step in the continuum of what's of Indian music, you know, and that continuum respects all the segments that brought us to this point, but we also have the responsibility to take the next step forward.
And would you ever perform like a straight classical set on the saxophone, a Hindustani classical set?
Yeah, definitely. I did 5 Hindustani recitals in Calcutta when I was there, and mostly doing Rag Yaman, Bageshri. I tried to do one in Marwa, but it was really hard. And so fortunately, my friends were in the audience, and they were very forgiving. But, you know, recitals are an important part of learning and development as well.
Yeah.
I definitely would like to do more just straight classical performances going forward.
Now, you're also an educator in New York. And can you tell us about the group that you work with?
Yeah, one of the groups I work with is Face the Music. Yeah, it's an incredible a program that gives young people a chance to play the music of living composers. And last year, a few Face Music ensembles sat in with Brooklyn Raga Massive and took a stab at learning some music by contemporary Indian composers. And I think that was a really special event and very expanding and eye-opening for the young people, and especially to have some people like Arun Ramamurthy and yourself and Samir Gupta sit in with them. I think for some of them, they'd never seen a sitar before live.
Well, I think you're doing some great things with these kids. What's the age range of the kids that you work with?
Ages 8 to 18. So there's about a 10-year span there.
So you have many different bands, and the program is open to more kids from all over the city?
Absolutely. Face the Music is still recruiting, and we are looking for young people ages 8 to 18 that are interested in exploring contemporary music, maybe have an interest in composing, in improvisation, or in just expanding their musical horizons.
Mm-hmm. And what's in the future for you? Can you tell us about your future projects and recordings and
absolutely. I'm
performances.
Hoping, yeah, I'm hoping to record this music that we performed tonight, actually, at some point soon.
Well, you just got a recording right now.
Oh, right.
Multi-track recording right there.
Well, there you go. It happened.
Yeah.
My next project is actually doing a raga-based wind ensemble for Lawrence Conservatory with a consortium of a number of other universities as well. So it's going to be about 30 Western instruments, but it's going to follow the rules and structure of the ragas itself. So I believe it'll be one of the first pieces in
30,
that.
30, you said.
30 instruments, 3-0.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. A lot. it's going to be, it's like a wind orchestra in a way.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be cool.
Fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And anything else you want to say to our listening audience here?
I would just say that I'm really grateful to be part of this event, and I think it speaks a lot, not just to the Brooklyn Raga Massive, but to the larger New York City community, that we're able to create spaces that are inclusive both of tradition and of people who have you know, other points of view or other experiences with this music, and the fact that all of us can share the same stage and contribute our own ideas here at the Rubin Museum is a gift, and I'm grateful to be part of it tonight.
Yeah, Brooklyn Raga Massive is a community sponsor of this festival, Raga's Live Festival. Brooklyn Raga Massive has, of course, for 5 years had a weekly concert series in many of the different venues in Brooklyn and Manhattan. This coming Wednesday, we'll be at Caveat with Jay Gandhi and Abhik Mukherjee. That's going to be an amazing concert. And Shank Lahiri on tabla. Jay, of course, is a great bansuri player who's played a couple sets here at the Ragas Live Festival, as did Abhik Mukherjee on sitar. So what we've done in 5 years, we have this weekly concert series featuring Indian classical music or bands that incorporate some elements of Indian music, like Akash's group just now, raga-inspired music. And then we have a jam session, kind of based on a format similar to a jazz jam session, and except that, you know, often there's very serious Indian classical musicians in the house and maybe they want to play, or maybe Akash shows up and there's a drummer and then there's a oud player and then and a sitarist and then they all play, and we like to mix it up and present the classical music on the same stage as people doing other adventurous things. So for 5 years we've done that, and Brooklyn Raga Massive has become a 501c3 nonprofit. We'll be having our Raga Gala on November 16th. That's right, our first gala fundraiser, the Raga Gala, on November 16th. Visit our website, brooklynragamassive.org, for more details. We're going to listen to a little bit of Vilayat Khan for a second before we transition over to the next group, which is Aaron Schrag on trumpet with Reza Bazi on guitar. So in just a minute...